It's Friday, May 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, U.S. President Donald Trump unveiled his proposal for an updated immigration plan.
First, it stops illegal immigration and fully secures the border. And second, it establishes a new legal immigration system.
Also, China formally charges two Canadians with crimes against the state. And scientists say they have new ways of tracking where clothing, medicines, and other items are being made. Those stories and more are ahead on today's International Edition. Unveiling a new immigration plan, U.S. President Donald Trump said he wanted to provide a sharp contrast to Democrats. The president is aiming to upend decades of family-based immigration policy.
Under the senseless rules of the current system, we're not able to give preference to a doctor, a researcher, a student who graduated number one in his class from the finest colleges in the world. Anybody, we're not able to take care of it. We're not able to make those incredible breakthroughs. If somebody graduates top of their class from the best college, sorry, go back to your country.
Now, to learn more about the president's proposed immigration policy, VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke earlier with VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman.
He really wants to make a radical overhaul of the legal immigration system here in the United States. He did emphasize that his proposal would keep the number of green cards or permanent residencies issued around the same number, 1.1 million annually. But the shift would be to prioritizing highly skilled and educated individuals with employment or investment prospects rather than the traditional family ties to U.S. citizens or for humanitarian needs. And you might not be surprised to learn that a lot of humanitarian groups are upset with this change. Now, the plan also would completely eliminate what's been called the diversity immigrant visa program, which the president has frequently derided as the green card lottery. That has given 50,000 people from countries, including a lot of people from Asia with low rates of immigration to the United States, some priority. Trump wants to replace this with what he calls the Build America visa to attract these highly skilled people that would use a points-based selection system. And we've seen this in a number of other Western countries being utilized, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, for example. And also, Ira, I think it's important to mention that what the president wants is to have a test essentially for English language proficiency, as well as a civics exam for anybody that would be legally immigrating to the United States.
What are the chances of this passing in Congress?
Very small, Ira. Democrats are not going to go for this because it doesn't at all address the issue of DACA, the Dreamers, immigrants who were brought to the United States illegally as children. And Republicans, both moderates and conservatives, also have issues with this. And Lindsey Graham, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, he's introducing his own immigration legislation. He says the White House plan is not designed to become law. California Congressman Ted Lieu, who's a Democrat and native of Taiwan, put out a tweet right around the time the president was talking about this, saying that this proposal is dead on arrival. And somewhat facetiously, he said that the House of Representatives will not vote for any immigration plan that would have barred the grandfather of President Trump from immigrating to the United States.
What comes into my mind here is the poem that's inscribed on the Statue of Liberty that says, "Bring me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free." What happened to that?
Well, that is not the type of immigrants that President Trump wants to see in this country. And he believes that that sort of rhetoric during the 2016 campaign helped to get him elected, and that there are a lot of people who share that philosophy as well. Now, we should also say that there are a lot of Democrats in Congress who do want to see reform for the immigration system and changes to border security. They just have a very different idea of what it should look like. But look, we're now, what, about 18 months from the presidential election. We have 23 Democrats are running right now. The president's going to have this as an issue front and center in his reelection campaign. These Democrats will also be forced to address it. And it just seems that there's very little chance of sweeping immigration reform being passed in this current political environment.
That was VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. The foreign minister of Burkina Faso has called on the international community to consider creating a counterterrorism coalition, like ones for Iraq and Afghanistan, to better combat terrorism in Africa's Sahel region. VOA United Nations correspondent Margaret Bashir has more.
The African region currently has the G5 Sahel Joint Force, which includes troops from Burkina Faso, Chad, Mali, Mauritania, and Niger. Those troops are tasked with fighting the threat from extremist and armed groups. But in the 2 years since its creation, the force has faced major delays and obstacles, including the car bombing of its headquarters. The UN says it is now 75% operational, but that ongoing equipment and training shortfalls are slowing down its progress toward full operational capacity. The Sahel also has 16,000 UN peacekeepers in Mali and 3,000 French troops based in Chad to help restore stability. But despite the presence of these three forces, Burkina Faso Foreign Minister Alpha Barry told the Security Council the situation caused by terrorism and intercommunal violence is worrisome and deteriorating. He's heard here through an interpreter.
This threat is gaining ground. It's no longer contained within the north of Mali, in the Burkina-based Sahel, or far from the borders of Mauritania. It is spreading and taking other forms, whose consequences are equally dramatic.
Barry noted the recent attacks on Christian churches in his country, an attack on Niger's military this week that killed 28 soldiers, and the abduction and rescue operation of four foreign tourists in northern Benin to illustrate the scope of the threat. The minister said one of the main drivers of insecurity on the continent is the civil war in Libya, which is fueling terrorism and the proliferation of guns. He said the Sahel nations require greater assistance as the security challenges are likely to be long-term.
Regarding the urgency of the actions to be undertaken, the member states of the G5 Sahel cannot succeed alone. It is therefore time for the international community to consider creating an international coalition to better tackle the phenomenon of terrorism in the G5 Sahel and throughout the rest of the Sahel.
Dozens of countries participated in the Afghanistan and Iraq coalitions. They fought the Taliban in Afghanistan and Al-Qaeda in Iraq for many years and at the cost of thousands of lives and billions of dollars. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
The EU's powerful antitrust authority on Thursday fined five major banks, including Barclays and Citigroup, more than $1 billion for collusion in the massive foreign exchange currency market. The European Commission sanctioned Barclays, the Royal Bank of Scotland, Citigroup, JP Morgan, and Japan's MUFG Bank a total of $1.2 billion after finding that traders colluded to fix exchange rates using electronic chat rooms. The commission said Swiss giant UBS received no fine as it revealed the collusion to authorities. EU Competition Commissioner Marguerite Vestager said, quote, "These cartel decisions sent a clear message that the commission will not tolerate collusive behavior in any sector of the financial markets. The behavior of these banks undermined the integrity of the sector at the expense of the European economy and consumers," end quote. The decision involves two cases of forex manipulation, with the first known as Essex Express in the Jimmy, because all the traders except Jimmy lived in the county to the east of London, according to the commission. The other one was called Three-Way Banana Split, according to the EU's executive arm, but didn't explain why. Some of the traders created the chat rooms and then invited one another to join based on their trading activities and personal affinities, creating closed circles of trust, according to the commission. The collusion took place between 2007 and 2013, roughly the years of the financial crisis, and has been sanctioned by other authorities, including the United States. Except Japan's MUFG, the banks cooperated with the commission and in return received lighter fines than the EU's maximum amount. JP Morgan spokesman said, quote, "We are pleased to resolve this historical matter, which relates to the conduct of one former employee. We have since made significant control improvements," end quote. Several of the banks, including Barclays, had already provisioned for the fines in earlier financial filings. Here are other major stories from around the globe. Diplomatic efforts aimed at resolving Venezuela's crisis accelerated Thursday as the government and opposition sent envoys for talks in Norway. Pakistan's foreign ministry has urged the United States and Iran to exercise restraint and resolve in their issues through talks. Former White House National Security Advisor Michael Flynn told the special counsel's office that people connected to the Trump administration and Congress sought to influence his cooperation with the Russia investigation. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile application. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center and Jet Propulsion Laboratory have found evidence that the moon is geologically more active than thought. The scientists found that a cooling interior is shrinking the moon, which in turn is causing tectonic activity that has been producing moonquakes between 2 and 5 on the Richter scale. Goddard scientists pinpointed moonquake locations by analyzing data gathered by seismometers placed on the lunar surface by Apollo astronauts 47 to 50 years ago. After examining images taken by NASA's Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, JPL scientists found signs of tectonic activity when they noticed curved hills and shallow trenches called wrinkle ridges within one of the vast basins on the moon called mares. The scientists figure the moon shrank by about 50 meters over the last several hundred million years. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Liu Kang said on Thursday that Michael Kovrig and Michael Spavor have been arrested for allegedly stealing state secrets. Both have been detained in the country since December 10th of last year. Kovrig is a former Canadian diplomat and expert at the International Crisis Group, and Spavor is a businessman with lengthy experience in North Korea. Canada's prime minister says the Chinese government is not following the same kinds of rules and principles as most democratic countries do. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau spoke in response to a question at a news conference in Paris when he was asked about China's formal arrest of the two Canadian citizens.
We continue to take the safety of the Canadians arbitrarily detained in China with the utmost priority. We will continue to work with our allies and work directly with China to ensure that they understand that we are a country of the rule of law. And that we will allow our legal processes to unfold independently, while at the same time we will always stand up for Canadians and continue to.
For more, I spoke earlier with VOA Beijing Bureau Chief Bill Ide. I started my conversation with Bill by asking him to explain what the arrest means for Kovrig and Spavor.
So we now know from Chinese authorities that both Michael Kovrig and Michael Spavor have been arrested. They were detained in December, and now the authorities here are announcing that they've been arrested. And what we understand, the charges that are connected with their cases are related to state secrets. Kovrig is suspected of gathering intelligence, state secrets for foreign forces, and Michael Spavor a businessman with close contacts with North Korea is suspected of stealing and illegally providing state secrets to foreign forces. We don't have a lot of details about what this means or what kind of state secrets they were stealing or passing on to others. We're not going to get any more clarity on the details of what this, what they're actually going to be accused of, because we don't have an indictment yet. And legal experts are saying that, this could take a long time. Legal experts say that the investigation now will continue, and then eventually we're going to have an indictment.
Do we know if they've been allowed to have any kind of legal representation in this interim period up until now, when they have been formally arrested and are now waiting an indictment?
Zero, zip, nada, nothing. In fact, the International Crisis Group, in their statement about the announcement of the arrest, noted that it's been 158 days of arbitrary detention. Michael hasn't been allowed to see his family or a lawyer. Both are in the same situation. And they've also, again, reiterated that his work was completely transparent, out in the open. Chinese officials knew what he was doing, and they argue that, nothing he did was harmful to China. What really seems to be going on here, Chinese officials, of course, deny this, but former diplomats and experts say that there's a linkage here between the cases of these two men and what is going on with Huawei in China and the chief financial officer, Meng Wanzhou, who was arrested there, and now the U.S. is seeking her extradition. So what many argue is that these cases are being used to pressure Canada. Some even say that they're being held as hostages. There's a very close connection between the dates of both cases. Just shortly after Meng Wanzhou was detained in the Canada, these two men were also taken into custody in China, and the huge contrast between their access to lawyers, their situations, has really shown a light on the huge difference between the legal systems in China and in the West.
That was VOA Beijing Bureau Chief Bill Ide. An international effort involving six countries has seen 10 people charged with accessing the bank accounts of more than 41,000 victims. Reuters' Joe Davies has that story.
A cybercrime network that stole millions of dollars from people all over the world has been dismantled by police. It took authorities from six countries 2.5 years to stop the Gosnim network. On Thursday, those involved in bringing charges against 10 of the culprits spoke of the enormous international effort required.
Our collective efforts in this case and many others have shown that entire criminal networks are increasingly targetable, and that coalitions like the one that stands before you today are willing and able to find and hold accountable those who conduct illicit activity from behind the perceived anonymity of a computer terminal or the perceived safety of an international border.
The defendants allegedly operated on underground Russian-speaking online criminal forums, advertising their specialist technical skills. They were recruited by the Gosnim network leader, a man from Tbilisi in Georgia. Together, they're suspected of infecting their victims' computers with malware designed to capture their online banking logins and stealing money, which was then laundered to accounts controlled by them. They're accused of stealing an estimated $100 million from more than 41,000 victims. The international effort to dismantle the criminal network began here in Ukraine. Searches were also carried out across a number of Eastern European countries, including Bulgaria and Moldova. Europol said five Russians charged in the US indictment remain at large. The leader of the criminal network and his technical assistant are being prosecuted here in Georgia. They've been stopped, but the task of bringing the most sophisticated of criminal gangs to justice remains.
That was Reuters' Joe Davies. Facebook says that it has identified a private Israel-based influence campaign aimed at disrupting elections in various countries. The AP's Zaria Shackley reports.
Facebook's head of cybersecurity policy says the tech giant has purged 65 accounts, 161 pages, and dozens of groups. He says they primarily posed as political candidates and peddled fake news about elections, mostly in sub-Saharan African countries and with some scattered activity in Southeast Asia. The pages racked up 2.8 million followers and hundreds of thousands of views. He says Facebook has banned Archimedes, an Israeli company that was behind the influence campaign. I'm Zaria Shakili.
And you're listening to VOA's International Edition.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Coming up this Sunday, Mother's Day special. Yeah, 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 mama. Whoa. 55 minutes of your favorite African songs that speak to, for, and about your mamas. Or about you, mamas. Now, one mother and diva of Malian music, Oumou Sangaré, speaks to us from Wassalam country about her music festival there. And a song of the week features Akodi and her song Shengerera Mama. I'm sorry, Mama Yangu. So tune in and feel the love. Music Time in Africa, 1505 and 20500 Universal Time.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. Scientists say they have new ways of tracking where clothing, medicines, and other items are being made, making it harder for unscrupulous businesses to sell items that don't work or violate laws. The new tools are made possible by using machine learning to profile unique DNA combinations of invisible microbes that vary from place to place. This technology was highlighted at the Milken Institute Global Conference being held in Los Angeles, and VOA's Elizabeth Lee reports.
Your clothes, your medicine, and other items all have genetic signatures because they each have been made in different places, and environments are filled with different microbes that make a unique combination of DNA profiles.
It is the collection of bacteria, fungi, viruses, protozoa that are present in any environment. The tiny organisms that we can't see that are everywhere on the planet.
Jessica Green is co-founder of Phylogen, a company that is building a microbial map of the world. It is collecting dust from different places and turning that dust, which contains microbes, into data using DNA sequencing technology.
Products pick up microbes not only from settling dust from the air, but also from touching surfaces in that environment and coming into contact with the workers.
One application is to fight a problem in the clothing industry.
So what we're hearing from brands is that up to a third of our retail goods are coming from unauthorized facilities.
According to Human Rights Watch, unauthorized subcontracting of facilities in the apparel industry occurs often, and it's in these places that some of the worst labor abuses happen. Phylogen is working in more than 40 countries and sampling the dust in hundreds of factories to create a database so the microbes on each product can be traced to all the places it's been.
So we're essentially digitizing the genome of places. We sample the DNA of the products, and then we use machine learning algorithms to map what is on the product with the factory, and can therefore verify for brands that their goods are made by their trusted suppliers in factories where you have good labor conditions, good environmental conditions, versus unauthorized facilities, which can be really detrimental.
With a database of distinct microbial DNA, Green says it's possible to predict the outbreak of disease and even trace counterfeit pills.
We can sequence the DNA of seized counterfeit pills, cluster together pills that have similar microbial signatures, and then use that to help both pharmaceutical companies and the government, the U.S. government, gain some intelligence about how many different sources of these manufacturing facilities are there.
And ultimately, one day, trace them to their source as the database grows and provide more information about what you eat and drink. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
As entrepreneurs and high-tech specialists gather this week in Paris for the Afrobytes and Viva Tech conferences, it's an opportunity to look at the progress that new high-tech startups have made on the continent. Nico Pino reports.
African startups are doing very well, and fundraising is booming on the continent. According to Partech Africa, a venture capital firm, in 2018, 146 startups in 19 African countries raised $1.16 billion for African digital entrepreneurs. Kenya, Nigeria, and South Africa received 78% of the total funding, with Egypt close behind. In French-speaking Africa, Senegal is the leading hub with $22 million raised in four deals. Compared to their Anglophone peers, Africa's Francophone countries operate in smaller markets and lack capital and mentors. Marion Jupp is a venture capital investor at Orange Digital Ventures.
Et malheureusement, en Afrique francophone, ce n'est pas vraiment dans l'ADN.
She says that, unfortunately, in Francophone Africa, it is not in our DNA. People who succeed in business or in elected position do not necessarily reach back to help their peers to show them how to be successful. In the Anglophone world, it's a must for anyone who wants to start something, seeking advice. So the gap is not only financial between both spaces. Africa is the next frontier for venture capital, with its booming population and mobile-first economy. That's why Google, Facebook, and PayPal participated in Paris in Afrobyte 2019. Amin Youssouf is Afrobyte CEO.
We don't want people globally to see African tech as an exotic stuff. We want to be here. We want to talk about AI, about blockchain. We want to talk about what is happening in the Silicon Valley, because it has an impact on us. We already had brilliant minds in Africa for sure, but specialized in tech to have that kind of conversations.
Unlike the global trend where men dominate the high-tech industry, women are leading the movement in Africa. Ben White is a VC for Africa CEO. He has been supporting startups on the continent for more than 10 years.
So actually what we see in the statistics is that women involvement and participation on the African continent is much higher than you would find, for example, in New York or San Francisco. I think it's an advantage. And that also means having women investors who are very sensitive to gender-related questions, and can also ensure that the systems that we're building are inclusive.
Governments in Africa are trying to regulate the activity and even support the sector. 40 Senegalese startups last November secured a total of $2 million in government funding. But some experts say government lack the skills needed to pick good investments. Kenza Lalou is the co-founder and managing partner at Outliers Ventures.
Public sectors should not invest, and this is what they actually, most of them are actually doing. They are not investing, but what they do is that they can they build funds of funds. So this is great. In Morocco, we have that in partnership with the World Bank, one of the local public organizations called CCG. They started a fund of fund called InnovInvest to invest in local funds, local VCs, so that they can de-risk.
With a population expected to reach 1.4 billion people by 2021 and a continent that will put about 1 billion smartphones into use within 2 years, Africa is a promising area for the world's leading high-tech and telecom companies. Nico Pino for VOA News, Paris.
Ayan Pei, whose modern designs and high-profile projects made him one of the best-known and most prolific architects of the 20th century, has died. He's 102. Pei's portfolio includes a controversial renovation of Paris's Louvre Museum and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Ohio. Pei was the son of a prominent banker in China. He left his homeland in 1935, moving to the U.S., and studied architecture at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and Harvard University. And after teaching and working for the U.S. government, he went to work for a New York developer in 1948 and started his own firm in 1955. And that's going to do it for today's International Edition. On behalf of Director Tracy Carter and Engineer John Ellison, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a fantastic Friday and an amazing weekend.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy.